At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And thanks for joining us for another Blunt Business here on CannabisRio.com. And, you know, we haven't talked about Canada and the various ongoings of the continuing federal legalization of the cannabis market there, which goes back to 2018. And we got the opportunity to be tipped off about the fact of a review that was being done by the Canadian government, Health Canada in more particular, when they are about to go ahead and give the final review of an internal review of the 2018 Cannabis Act. And my next guest is here to go talk about that and other things. He manages the leading cannabis brand house in Canada, proudly holding top market share positions in vapes and infused pre-rolls. I'm here with the founder and CEO of Motif Labs, Mario Narek. Mario, thanks for being on.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate you taking time to go and talk to us about this, because in the area of Canada, we always look at Canada as being the testing ground. Again, having the full expanse of legalization, at some point, we want to see what will happen when it comes to what the United States will go and do, if that day ever comes. As again, if I'm going to go ahead and assume when the opportunities of federal legalization will ever happen in the United States, 3 to 5 years down the line, until a supermajority House and Senate and the Congress is put in place. And I don't think it'll make a difference which president is in office. I just think that it's a bipartisan issue. And a supermajority that is going to be able to control which side or the other will be able to go and have this, will be able to start passing bills. Cannabis will then be one of those bills that will finally be put in front for a vote. And I think it'll probably have no issues making it through and being passed. But Canada is our example. Now, as I just made mention at the top of the show, the 2018 Cannabis Act is still under internal review. We're supposed to hear the final findings of that. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But first, let's go ahead and talk about Motif Labs and establish the importance of what you're doing in Canada. Founded in 2017, you have a house of brands approaching to serve Canada's differing cannabis consumers. You have products including Rizzlers, which is a new product we'll discuss a little bit later on in the program, Box Hot, Debunk, and Boondocks, serving the country's distinct consumption cohorts, governed so completely that brands can't use the word neon in their marketing materials. Many Canadian companies complain that there's restrictions that are making it too hard for them to succeed. And when it comes to the regulations, Mario, you said this, quote, being deeply concerned into the cannabis 2.0 consumer has meant that we are thriving and succeeding in what admittedly is a strictly regulated and challenging industry. And you went on to say that we don't complain about the hurdles. We embrace them. And in fact, we use them as fodder for creativity and innovation. So can you expand on that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that intro. Yes, we are a leading LP up in Canada. We're, you know, given the week, we're 6th or 7th largest in the country and have about 4.5 points of market share total. And we're a leader in vape, as you mentioned. Number one in vape and top 3 in infused pre-rolls. So we've been in the space for quite a while now. Got our license, well, quite a while relative to when the industry came to be. But we got our license, you know, 3-4 years ago, and have really developed into a brand house. Look, yeah, I mean, there's challenges, right? It's a brand new industry of a substance that was illicit prior, and there's a lot of complexities for the government to roll that out and roll that program out. And I think, you know, it's a constant evolution of regulations, and you have to stay on top of them. I mean, from the perspective of, you know, we embrace, look, you can be part of the conversation. You know, you can really be at the knife's edge of providing information to the government so that they can make better decisions. You can't really hang your hat on major changes happening. You have to build a business that can succeed within the regulatory framework you're given. And to be quite frank, it's a level playing field for us up in Canada. So, I mean, while it is restrictive, there's plenty of opportunity to succeed, whether it's, you know, we run a very profitable business. We have boisterous, loud, exciting brands. You know, there are things that we wish we could do that we can't, but I don't think it's something that's getting in the way of you know, creating a viable industry up in Canada. It's a very viable industry, and we run a profitable, viable business within it.
There's a laundry list of things that have been talked about, if you look at the headlines, about the issues that Canada faces right now, aside from the restrictions. $3.8 billion worth of product destroyed because of various compliance issues. A drop in licenses year over year now. I think it was about 3 or 4% drop in licenses that are being brought in, and I'm not sure what, I really don't want to go into the details of that as to why. And then the other thing also come out is the fact that the illicit market is still estimating to account between one quarter or half of all cannabis sales in the country, according to business services company Deloitte Canada.
Yeah, that's been a very different, it's so different when you look at some of the states versus Canada. I mean, for us, what's really driving it, you know, what's different up here is that, you know, the retailers, we have so many legal licensed retailers. There's 3,600 of them in Canada. I mean, you know, arguably, you know, too many for the size of the market. And so there are very few illicit cannabis retailers that actually move a lot of volume right now the way that they used to 5-6 years ago. You know, I think that percentage, it's really hard to say, you know, what is it and where is it in our range? But I can tell you that, you know, the big drivers of the illicit market in Canada are edibles and certain concentrate like niche extracts. And that's largely tied to, for edibles, it's tied to regulation, right? You know, that's one area where we need to advance our regulation for sure, because, you know, the people that buy edibles, they want to buy 50, 100, 200, 1,000 milligrams. They do not want to buy 10 milligrams at a time, which is what we're limited to. And so for sure, the illicit market is tremendously supported by edibles up here in Canada. The other one that's probably a good chunk of that is these nice, like, hydrocarbon extracts. You know, that supply chain and our ability to make good products at the right price in these niche connoisseur products is not there yet. And so I'm sure that there are still quite a few black market operators selling quite a bit of that. But for you know, your big categories, vapes, you know, pre-rolls, infused joints, you know, these things are, I mean, we're making them at such a good cost and consistency. There's very little motivation to go to the black market for those types of things.
So let's go ahead and delve deeply into the panel of experts that are now scrutinizing Canada's Federal Cannabis Act, which was instituted October 2018. And it's later this spring, they said, or actually, I don't know, by the end of March, according to MJ Biz Daily, we're supposed to be able to go and see the final findings of all this. So industry officials will be watching closely for recommendations related to the economic, social, and environmental impacts of the Cannabis Act. And there could be possible reforms that have ramifications for the heavily regulated industry. So the formal review to examine the law's impact on public health, consumption patterns, and effect on indigenous communities, they're covering these areas: the law's economic and environmental impacts, progress towards providing access to legal products, impact on access to medical cannabis, impact on indigenous peoples, racial communities, and women who face significant barriers to participating in the legal industry. The terms guiding the review, the panel's final report is supposed to be delivered no less to Canada's health ministers no later than 18 months after the establishment of this panel. So that is coming up right now by the end of this month as we're recording this, middle of March. And Health Canada then will, once the final report is tabled in Parliament, Health Canada will carefully review the panel's recommendations. And we were just talking before the break, Mario, about, is there anything that you'd see that the industry might be blindsided by, that could, any reforms that have been talked about or have been rumbled that might be possible or that you might hope to see coming out of this?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, I think I'd start with, you know, things have been in the review for a long time. And I think that's an indication of, like, speed. You know, there isn't a lot of speed. So I think while those recommendations may come out soon, you know, nothing's going to be getting implemented overnight. And you know, the government here moves very methodically. So I don't think that there's going to be a switch that gets flipped on anything drastic. I do think that we're going to get more visibility into specific areas that can then help us inform our strategies going forward. Oftentimes, too, unless it's a major kind of a one-off. Like Health Canada provides pretty long lead times on any changes in terms of being able to manage those changes. So I wanted to kind of set that expectation right away. I mean, the things that are going to be discussed are, you know, are pretty broadly discussed right now, right? You know, one of the big ones is going to be excise tax. Everybody always talks about excise tax. Everybody is, you know, citing that excise tax is too high or too restrictive. You know, so we expect to hear a little bit more in the way of, you know, are there going to be any changes to the tax regime? I mean, there's already been some pretty specific things regarding, you know, changing the way that cannabis flower is taxed for the benefit that have been tabled. So we're hoping to see some improvements there across all categories. You know, I think, you know, nobody should be holding their breath. They're going to change the course of their business. At best, they're going to maybe provide a little bit of relief and a little bit more profitability. But if somebody's depending on taxes to change to run a profitable business, that's a scary and low likelihood thing to be hoping for. The other one is on medical, right? Like if you know, and I think this one's pretty interesting, is if we remove the taxes on THC within medical, I think that'd be a really big change to that industry and could grow it quite a bit. Taxes make up a big chunk of the MSRP that the consumer ultimately gets. So if that's not part of the medical regime, those products are going to become cheaper. And I think that would grow that that channel for a lot of people. So those that are poised with a medical license and ship into medical could see some wins there. And then, like I said earlier, edibles, you know, we're all hoping to see some change with edibles. That's the one that blatantly needs to be addressed. You know, we're currently not selling edibles, mainly because they're not really a viable product category in Canada.
Right.
But we have a whole host of products that are, you know, locked and loaded that we're really excited about that we would launch if things changed for edibles. Also for Motif Labs, if edibles limits increase, people are going to need more oil. We're also a very large supplier of bulk oil. So we anticipate that would change. And pull a lot of that out of the illicit market. So a lot of it's going to be tied to excise, minor tweaks to excise, edibles. Really, I don't think there's going to be anything too earth-shattering. There could be a slight further tightening on like naming convention in terms of flavors. We've been already seeing that. Like, you know, maybe 2 years ago, we could have called something like a lime bubble, you know, to insinuate that it's like a soda kind of flavor. And now you can't say lime bubble. You have to keep kind of saying different things so that they abide by the rules. So we could see actually a little bit of a tightening on that,
right?
But nothing that would be out of stocking, because Health Canada has already been slowly kind of tightening some of that over the last 6 months. But really, like, you're not going to get a list of things that are like, okay, now like 70% of the business are going out of business.
No.
Or, you know, 70% of the businesses are now saved and they're profitable. Like it's going to be minor optimizations.
Maybe there's things where I'm trying to think of some other scenarios where if packaging is going to be changed, is there going to be some new changes where what kind of packaging you can go ahead and use going forward that could be a little bit more environmentally, you know, efficient. The other area I also look at very importantly is Canada is so well on doing import-export. And a scenario I always looked at, which I started tagging very early on, Canada's the OPEC of cannabis. Like it really is. Shipping to either Australia or to Europe or to other markets, I don't know how much of that, if Motif Labs does any of that at all, but one of the areas that I look at is that, according to MG Biz Daily, they make mention of that for the 2022-2023 fiscal year, medical products were worth $160 million Canadian dollars, $118 million U.S. overseas, were exported, 50% increase over the previous year. And that's according to figures shared by Health Canada with MG Biz Daily. And domestic sales was from April 22 to March 23 were $401 Canadian million, a 9% lower. So the thing is, if their sales are a little bit stunted or not doing so well domestically, then you can ship that out. Is there any export that seems being done right now by Motif Labs for products at all? Is that something that you use to kind of offset if there is a need to get the product pushed out?
Today, we haven't spent a lot of time and effort on it. We've been very focused on kind of succeeding in the Canadian market. You know, I do think it's becoming bigger, better, maybe a little bit easier. It takes two to tango with you know, export, right? Like, it's not all about what Health Canada wants to see. It's about what that receiving country needs to see, right? And I think that's equally as important. You know, for us, it's just not been a focus area because, again, you can only focus on so much. But it is something that we're, you know, it's in our roadmap this year and we're exploring. And so, you know, how the regulation is going to change to maybe make that simpler, I'm not very in tune with. I mean, ultimately, you need to have, to get into any major country, you need to have GMP level production, which is not cheap production, and it's not a cheap facility. And to date, you know, it's been a lot of bulk products, bulk flour, maybe some bulk extracts being sold. As we start seeing countries buying more of these finished products, you know, that's where we get a little more interested. And we're having some conversations now to partner up with GMP licenses to get our top brands out into other markets. For us, it's not a huge part of the roadmap, but for a few bigger LPs, they're focusing there, and it's becoming a more viable business model for sure. In terms of packaging, it's pretty loose. I mean, it just has to be child resistant. So, you know, it can be, that has to be in place. That's not going to change. You know, I think the one thing that's going to improve environment is, again, allowing more edibles in a single pack. Like if I go to a store and I have to buy 20 bags like this to get my dose of edibles, like that's not efficient. So, it's going to be, it's been a long time coming, but I'm not anticipating these huge earth shattering changes. It's going to be, you know, I'm really looking forward to over time us being able to sell THC free products in different channels. I think that's something I'd be looking for, right? Because, you know, the hemp bill, I think, went a little bit, maybe too far, but in Canada, to be able to not be able to sell like a CBD oil that has no THC in it in a pharmacy is kind of ridiculous. So yeah. I think like something like that would be a very positive change to get these medically beneficial cannabinoids that aren't THC to a broader demographic. And I think it would really grow our industry up here.
We're going to come back with more here with Mario Arnard, founder and CEO of Motif Labs here on Blunt Business. And we're going to go more into depth. And for those of you that do not know what the formal review of the 2018 Cannabis Act in Canada and what they're trying to go and review, we're going to go and go into detail as to what they're doing. We're going to get Mario's take on it. Back with more questions after this.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated. Forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Rose is your name, but when you poop, it sure don't smell like roses. Your number 2 burns the hair in my nose, but we fought hand in paw. Now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear, I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with Mario Arnard, founder and CEO of Motif Labs. By the way, website, I would definitely recommend you go and take a look at right now while we're doing the interview. MOTIFLabs.ca, MotifLabs.ca. And take a look at the wonderful lineup of products. We'll get back to, we'll go and talk about those products a little bit later on the program after the next break. But now, is there a lot of that when it comes down to other phytocannabinoids? I know Health Canada also has talked about, you know, giving guidance on cannabis products that might have Delta-9 THC or Delta-8 or 10, and they recommend processors apply the regulatory controls applicable to Delta-9 to all other intoxicating cannabinoids in cannabis products. So, like, as you said, there's particular components that what you can have CBD products, but again, have any kind of trace of THC in it. We always have a lot of issues where states are either banning or outlawing Delta 8 or to Delta 9 and continue to go after the synthetic realm of the cannabinoids that are being, you know, lab processed. Is that something that you see a lot of right now up in Canada, that the cracking down on it, or is it something where, you know, again, Health Canada has some particular standards that might be kind of overstretched?
Yeah, you guys had a bit of a different setup down there where it became very easy to get a CBD license, and then people started exploiting that and converting CBD into like these Delta 8, which was a psychoactive. You know, for us, it's no easier to get a CBD license than it is a cannabis license. So you're not seeing this huge like push for Delta 8 because there's no benefit to it. It's actually more complicated than making Delta 9. Now, what they did to clarify already is that Delta 8 is not going to be exempt from taxes. So I think a lot of people would have chased it because something like CBD that doesn't have the same level of tax as THC in Canada. And I think they expanded that definition of psychoactive so that people aren't synthesizing Delta 8 and then selling, you know, undercutting the THC market. They're going to apply that same tax on the Delta 8. The ones that are really, you know, at risk that I think are kind of, that we're providing our own feedback on is the definition of psychoactive. So like right now, there's a chance that CBN is going to end up on that list, which I think will be very harmful for the industry because CBN is not very psychoactive. It's extremely helpful for sleep. And I think it could, really slow down that cannabinoid in particular. But you know, really the two kind of in contention are Delta 8 and CBN. Delta 8 pretty clearly needs to get taxed. Certain other synthetic like THCAO acetate have been cracked down on. So they've really quickly cracked down on that. But again, there's not a huge incentive. I can't, like, it's just as hard to start a hemp extraction lab as it is a cannabis extraction lab. So, but CBN's an interesting one. I don't think they should be classifying that as psychoactive and taxing it. I think it needs a more broader appeal.
So let's go into the actual, well, we do know already what the panel of experts that have been reviewing the Cannabis Act of 2018. So back in October, they did release a preliminary report, and real quick, I want to just quote from it. Quote, a main message from industry representatives was that despite the growth of the legal cannabis market, companies across the supply chain are struggling to realize profits and maintain financial viability. In the second phase of the review, the panel was tasked with working with provinces and territories to identify priority areas for action that might have implications for the respective jurisdictions under the Cannabis Act, as well as for businesses operating in the industry. Any advice from the panel can have major implications for regulated and illegal cannabis operators, as well as companies still operating in gray areas throughout Canada, depending on the specific recommendations of whether the government commits to implementing them. But now, you just made mention of CBN, of products being deemed what their definition of psychoactive is. If you got a chance to go ahead and, you know, address Health Canada as to what they could be doing upon their review, what changes, significant changes, could they be making to reform or revise the Cannabis Act?
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing I do want to, you know, I do want to make clear is that the fact that they're finding companies are struggling to realize profits, you know, I don't think all of that is on the current regulatory regime. You know, Motif has been profitable for almost 3 years, growing. So it's very possible to run a profitable business. It's challenging, but it's possible. So I don't think we should be letting the big public companies off the hook in terms of actually getting their act together and running a tight business. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit there. But there are absolutely optimizations that should be made to assist, right? I mean, we've mentioned edibles. That has to change. It's ridiculous, right? And if you want edibles to exist in the legal market, that has to change. You know, I think asking them to lower excise by much is going to fall on deaf ears. I think one thing we deal with in Canada is cash flow issues. So profitability and cash flow are two different things. Motif's profitable, but we run into cash flow issues. For example, Ontario pays us in 60 days, but the federal government wants us to pay them in 30 days. So like that would be a very easy and viable thing to change, to put a lot more cash into the pockets of these businesses to then be able to keep funding that growth. I would be asking for that. I'd be asking for edibles. You know, there's a few little fees in there that don't seem necessary. I mean, a 2.3% of net revenue fee that goes into Health Canada. I mean, that would be, that would open up some nice, you know, a little bump of space in the profitability that we could, you know, what Motif would do with that is reinvest in education and marketing and try to keep, you know, pulling people into the legal market, whether they're in the illicit or haven't tried it yet. But those are the things, right? Minor tweaks. You know, right now we have to have a specific tax stamp for every province. It's inefficient, like moving to a federal stamp. But going in and asking, you know, lower my taxes by half, I mean, it's just, it's going to fall on deaf ears. So, you know, I think you have to be a little more strategic with the asks.
Now, one other area that was talked about earlier this year, National Post actually reported about it, was the issue with banking, where there are some banks that are refusing to go and offer services to cannabis companies. The Cannabis Council of Canada, which is an industry lobby group, talking about not being able to go and open an account with any of Canada's five major banks. And with that, you know, we obviously in the States talk about the Safe Banking Act being a relief mechanism that would be put in place for cannabis companies to be able to work with banks pretty much freely. And that would have kind of opened up the space. We also talk about the fact of the descheduling of cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, which is supposed to be most likely done by the end, but before the presidential election season's up in November, that the HHS is going to go ahead and live with that recommendation. The DEA is going to reschedule. And the Section 280 of the IRS's revenue tax code will be no longer deemed for cannabis companies. It will no longer be looked at as illegal. They actually can go ahead and start writing off taxes. Maybe 10 to 12% of the revenue comes back to them. Who knows if they're going to get, you know, back taxes from that from previous years, but we'll see what happens. But now, when it comes to being able to go ahead and work pretty easily with banking companies, with banks up there in Canada, have there been any issues at all in terms of being able to go ahead and either secure loans or financial services whatsoever?
That is very challenged, and it's not due to legislation as much as it's due to like risk tolerance, right? I mean, I think a lot of, you know, I think at first it was, hey, there was a stigma, but then it was, hey, we all lost a lot of money because we, you know, there was a bunch of poorly run businesses. And so now what we're getting through is like these banks need to reestablish, you know, their risk tolerance for the industry, because quite frankly, you know, people did, they blew it early days, like no other way to put it. They blew it, like wasting $5 billion on Canada is just like insane. It's completely unnecessary. And they that has made a lot of these, you know, large institutions very skeptical. And what I'll tell you is we're a private business that's profitable, that's growing, that commands really strong market share. And we're going from a more local credit union to a major big five bank right now. So they are going to bank us. They're going to offer us better, you know, credit services. But getting loans that have stipulations that are reasonable, you know, and getting debt through banks is still very constricted in Canada. Absolutely. And it's mainly a risk profile thing. But we are starting to see that change. So if you're showing consistent financials and you're having the right conversations, the doors are starting to open again, right? But you have to have a strong business. You're not going to be getting, you know, $200 million loan to open another greenhouse. That's over.
Now, also at the start of the year, we talked about the federal licensees that were dropping to work low, and you made a good point about what they were talking about with that. But there's, besides the points of the issues about what many of Canada's large licensed producers are facing right now with business prospects. So they're talking about the fact that there's falling prices due to large oversupply, federal taxation regime, obviously, like you said, hell, if we can go and ask the federal government, hey, let's go ahead and take half our taxes, quit, you know, charging us so much on the excise tax, take it down from 10% to something lower, among other things. Stiff competition from smaller, more specialized and nimble companies, large government-owned wholesalers earning most of the profit in the industry, and those difficult circumstances appear to be steering would-be investors and entrepreneurs away from entering the market, the data suggests, as the number of prospective federal licensees continues to decline. That's according to a story from MG Biz Daily talking about the licenses. So that's what they laid out as some of the reasons as to why there are less licenses being doled out. Aside from what you had already mentioned before, you know, are there any concerns at all about the possible lack of shelf space and who you have to go ahead and work with? You know, is the issue where government-owned wholesalers really taking up a lot of profit? And is that, you know, how much do you have to go and work with those wholesalers to put your product on the shelves?
Yeah, there's a lot in there, in that question. So I'll try to dissect it into a few
sections. Yeah.
Right. The challenge is, so the whole license thing is not new. It shouldn't be a headline. It's like, we have too many licenses. Happens in every industry. You know, it's a free market, too much supply, and now they're constricting. Falling prices is continuing to be a challenge, but much less of a challenge. You know, if you go back 24 months, there were, you know, the bigger issue is large public companies listing products at prices that are not sustainable, that don't generate profit, and then further financing those, digging deeper into their profits to sell an unsustainable product, right? That's what was happening for a while. You know, zoom back 16 months, 18 months, there's probably 10, 15 companies that were willing to do this. Today, there's maybe only three or four that can even afford to do it, right? And so that's changing as well. The category managers aren't choosing our SKUs at the provincial boards. They're not choosing them based on price. They're choosing them based on execution, feasibility, and how they fit a need. Now, is it challenging in the price environment? Yeah, for sure. We keep having, you know, ankle biters launching at lower prices, but you know, what you're seeing is those companies are fizzling and they're going out of business because they're not building sustainable businesses where the value proposition of the product is a profitable value proposition. So from our perspective, shelf space is not a concern. There is 3,600 retailers. We have great relationships with the provincial boards where for most part, they choose, you know, the products that get listed in the assortment. You know, there are some retailers that are at risk, but mainly, you know, retail is consolidating. So even if some smaller ones are getting gobbled up by bigger ones, we have strong relationships there. And to be quite frank, you know, cutting out some of the noise of the industry is actually going to be very good for it. That's one way you drive profitability. Like, we don't need 4,000 SKUs. And a lot of those SKUs are poor products. So, but they create confusion, right? If you're a retailer and you have a menu of 4,000, you're going to be confused by this sheer amount of choice. So it's really just a right sizing and a maturing that's happening, right? You can only succeed if you create products that people want to buy that drive profit. It's pretty simple. It seems ridiculous to say, but you know, it's no longer who has the biggest canopy space or who has the largest extractor. That's not what makes you money. It's convincing the right amount of people to pay the right price for the right product. I mean, that's my viewpoint on it. And maybe that's because, you know, Motif's found success in a challenge environment. But
right.
Feel free to dig deeper because there was a few points to that question. So happy to expand on any of it.
Oh, no, the other part was just the wholesalers. The tax is really talking about the excise tax and the SU, we're taxing that. And oversupply, we've talked about that pretty extensively as well. So we're going to leave it there. There's not much, that really is the expanse of where we're at. Now we just have to wait and see what Health Canada comes back with, the panel of experts, and what they give us final say as to this initial five-year report. But, you know, let's go ahead and keep an eye on that. Of course, Blum, this is when we learn about that, we learn more about it. And if there's anything significant, we'll go ahead and pass it along to the listeners. Meantime, we're going to come back and talk with Mario about a brand new cannabis brand redefining the consumer experience in the vape market. And of course, we got to also talk about the fact that, you know, products like Motif Labs are doing have been able to take and secure the number one vape in Canada. We're going to talk about that all coming up after a short break. I'm here with Mario Narek, founder and CEO of Motif Labs. Website is motiflabs.ca, M-O-T-I-F, labs with an S, .ca. Take a look at that and their expansive line of products as we go to a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
I'm back with final questions with Mario Narek, founder and CEO of Motif Labs here on Blunt Business. Thank you so much, Mario, by the way, for answering so much and giving your take in all this areas when it comes to the Cannabis Act of 2018, the review that's been going on right now with the panel of experts, the five-year review of what's been going on and what might come of it, and really just giving a real expansive overview of what's going on in Canada. We haven't had much opportunity to get an interview like this and get someone like yourself that's working so expansively in the space and doing so well. So it's a real testament, and really thank you for coming on to tell us about that. Now let's go ahead and talk about the products, because we haven't had a chance to delve into it, but if you look at the website, motiflabs.ca, Box Hot, Rizzlers, Debunk, and Boondocks are among the products. If you can, just real quickly, take us into just specifically the lot of products that you have right now that people are getting a chance to go in. If we can, give a bit of an elevator pitch as to what you have in those four brand names.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to you know, thank you as well on asking about Canada and then, you know, providing a little more intel down to your listening base. I appreciate that chance. Yeah, in terms of the products, I mean, this is the stuff that I'm excited about, right? Like, I'm not out here fighting battles with the government. I'm an innovator. I'm a product developer. I'm a marketer. And this is really what gets me out of bed. And this is what's driving our business forward. So really, I mean, we have four brands. BoxHot is, you know, the star of the show. This is a brand that we launched that, like, put us on the map. Really, the elevator pitch for that is big, loud, bold, fun products that don't take themselves too seriously, that push the envelope of, you know, how they're designed. And, you know, we launched the biggest vape in Canada. We launched the biggest blunt in Canada. So we're always big, loud, bold, and really kind of targeting that mainstream market. And that's the one that put us on the map. It's the number one vape brand in the country. It's a top three infused pre-roll brand in the country. And it continues to grow and expand. The next one's Debunk, which is a more recent brand that launched last year. And that one's a little bit more for the connoisseur. It takes some of our higher tech products, where we use hydrocarbon to make liquid diamonds, which are like these super potent vapes, you know, 95% THC, make super potent infused pre-rolls that are in blunts that are 50% and higher. We're going to be getting more into the like live resins. So that brand is a little more high tech, a little more premium than BoxHot, and really pushing the boundaries of technology and really giving that educated consumer what they want. Rizzler is our latest brand. Really excited about it. This is, you know, Motif taking another shot at trying to change the game when it comes to vapes. You know, it's a closed loop system, which for those who don't understand, most vapes are these 5-10 threads, right? Where you know, many cartridges can work with many batteries. If you look to nicotine, or if you look to some of the more mature states, closed loop systems where the battery and the cartridge only work together are growing. We decided to go that direction for a couple of reasons. Visually, it's very exciting, right? Our target demographic of Gen Z is very in tune with this format. And they really like it. Hardware is a huge driver of a brand moment in Canada. And by putting it into this type of hardware, we really stand out. So super excited about that. It just launched last month. You know, great few weeks in market. You know, we have to build that market. We have to get people onto the platform, but our product's positioned well. Rizzler's also just went into infused pre-rolls, and those things are flying off the shelf. So we're very cognizant of basket price. So not just the cheapest product necessarily, but designing the product so that it's a low basket price, because our consumers are young and they're stressed financially in Canada. And so we need to be able to offer them an experience that they can afford. And then the final brand is Boondocks, which is a placeholder brand for us to expand our like strain specific, more premium products. So live resin infused pre-rolls, live resin vapes, rosin products. That's what we're going to be filling that pipeline with for the rest of the year here.
When I'm looking at the products themselves and just see what you're doing with it, it's a first of all, BoxHot. When I look at the BoxHot and Rizzler, especially the design of the vape pens themselves, and just the devices you have, the flavors you have, so explosive flavor when I look at them. Because when I look at this, the BoxHot, I can see why it's done so well as number one vape in Canada. Like the design, the look of it, it just looks great. You know, you get it, you're going off and the particular flavors you got, either with peach or cherry or couch log, okay? And some of the others that you have in here is quite a setup. And, you know, a lot of detail into the design, a lot of detail into what you put together. The Rizzler's thing, I think garbage pail kits when I think. It's not like it's anything. It's just it has this, it's such a retro look to it as well. And I noticed that there's quite a bit. Retro is very prominent through all your brands. What is the inspiration for all the design that you have for some of the products besides the vape and how, you know, the potency and how well they pull and all of that?
Yeah, look, we have a really great marketing and creative team, so I'm not going to be taking the credit. Like, you know, it's a collaborative effort. I'm deep in there with them. This is, again, like I said, this gets me out of bed every day, right, is the product development. You know, I think fundamentally when we entered the brand space, what we noticed was there was a lot of people that were focused very heavily on wellness, and I think that's an important segment, but I think it's not mature enough yet to drive, you know, value and revenue at scale. And then a lot of people were really focused on legacy kind of products, which also has a place. You know, what we really try to do is for the most part, we try to expand on what cannabis to us is, which is just fun, right? It shouldn't be that complicated. You know, my experiences with cannabis are just, you know, hanging out with my buddies at a cottage, like go, you know, playing frisbee on a beach. Like, you know, playing music, just hanging out, right? So not overcomplicating it, and then just pairing that branding to the fun. The retro is just, you know, it's funny, right? Like Boxhot, we went 80s because the 80s is all like hair metal, you know, bodybuilders,
right?
You know, bigger, bolder, louder. You know, we have a Trans Am, which is a very loud, obnoxious car, like an 80s Trans Am. So like it really fit that ethos of the brand of being like bigger than life. 80s were very larger than life. You know, Rizzlers is just a nod to the 90s. I mean, with Gen Z, 90s kind of throwbacks are really popular right now. But we've brought it into the future. So we're blending like, you know, West Coast skate style kind of branding from the 90s with like AI to kind of bring it into the future. And so really what we're doing is we're very in tune with what people like in the demographics. And we try to, you know, we try to really create these products that are going to resonate, right? But yeah, ultimately it just boils down to our teams are a bunch of consumers. We're really close to the consumer, and we make products we would want to buy. And that's served us well.
You know, what you have, you know, the appeal, how well they stand out on a store shelf is quite good. And
yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And also you do a lot of work in terms of the new Rizzlers product, that branding, intuitive premium products, and that you have the pods that work seamlessly with a dispenser batteries, auto draw activation, magnetic connection, no threads or buttons needed, ready to hit and go. I know it's just like, it's about as simple as just using like a micro USB just to charge it and get it up and ready to go again. Quite a work to what you have for the products. And for those that are looking to go out there and they're in Canada, they want to get themselves their hands on any of those products, whether it's Boxhot, whether it's Rizzlers, whether it's any of those products, Debunk, among others, best places to go and buy, how would you go and let people recommend if they're in Canada? Where should they be going looking for those products at?
Yeah, it's a good question, right? I mean, Boxhot is very widely distributed. I mean, just go into a store and you'll see Boxhot. You know, at least 90 to 95% of the stores in Canada have something Boxhot. So that is a national kind of brand that's kind of broken through and has real brand loyalty. Rizzlers is just getting up and going. You know, and I suggest, you know, and the distribution's changing weekly, right? You know, we for example, in BC, in the first 3 weeks, we entered 25% of the stores in that province within 3 weeks. You know, by the time somebody's in Canada a month from now, we'll probably be in 40, 50% of the stores. So, you know, follow us on social. Our team's very active on social. Drop us a line and we'll give you a store list to get very specific. And we're happy to do that. We do a lot of that. You know, but for Boxhot, go to a store and buy Boxhot because it's everywhere.
Fantastic. Again, been joined with Mario Narek, founder and CEO of Motif Labs. And if you want to look at all the products in one place and connect all of them, motiflabs.ca, motiflabs.ca. Mario, thanks for being all with us. Really appreciate you taking all this time out for us.
Thank you so much for the thoughtful questions, and thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. And again, listeners, thanks for listening in and hearing all this important information for Canada. Obviously, we always talk about it is the testing ground for where federal legalization, whenever that comes, the United States, we always need to go and follow what Canada's doing because they are setting the role model for what needs to be done in terms of rollout of legalization here in the States. So it's always important to go ahead and keep an eye on that. And we'll continue that here on Blood Business. And we'll talk to you next time.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit MidAmerica shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.